Hi. Reading the card explains the card. Kira.
Hi. But how many lines of text does it actually have? Maya.
Today, we are doing another Deck Tech episode.
Woo! Deck Tech!
Deck Tech!
These are, like, my favorite episodes.
I think it's fun to just really, like, sink your fingers, your teeth, your claws into the meat of a deck and just kind of extrapolate a little bit because, not for nothing, you're not going to build every deck that you come across. Just financially, you can't do it. I mean, I might try and do it. I reached out to Pat and asked for a whole bunch of standard cards because I do try and build every deck that I come across. But that doesn't mean that everyone is necessarily going to build every single deck that they come across. So it is beholden on us to share with you exactly what's going on in these various decks that you might be seeing put up results in some events. And
yeah, but just the cool ones.
Just the cool ones. It's funny to say that because, of course, we did start with with Vivi. But that was kind of like a, we gotta.
It was an infomercial. Not an infomercial, sorry, a PSA.
It was a PSA. It was a PSA just be aware, but don't do it.
Yeah. This is what this deck looks like. This is how you beat it.
This is how you beat it. Well, and now we're inching our way towards November 10th.
It's actually pretty close now. It's like a month away.
Now it's close. It's less than a month away.
Woo!
But it can't come fast enough is really the way that I'm thinking about it. But Maya, today I have chosen the deck, and the deck that I have chosen is Simic Omniscience.
Omni, we're back.
Omniscience is back. Well, there was a bit of a period where Omniscience died, and you couldn't play it anymore because the problem with Omniscience is that even though it has probably one of the best lines of text on a Magic card, you may cast spells without paying their mana costs. The problem is if you look at the cost of Omniscience, it's a 10 mana enchantment.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It's not a small number, for sure.
And generally, if the game is not over already by turn 10, having an Omniscience in play at that point is not actually going to help you that much.
Well, if you have 10 mana, you should probably be able to cast whatever spells you were normally casting.
What else you would need. Exactly.
Right?
And so prior to Abuelo's Awakening being banned, 4 mana. 4 for a 10 mana enchantment.
That's pretty good.
That's a very good rate. And the Azorius Omniscience deck played very differently. It had very different pieces. Obviously, white versus green as your secondary color, like, provided a lot of different, you know, different cards. Different.
Strict upgrade, really.
Green is better. But the deck has changed a lot. The way that you put Omniscience into play is very different. And the way that it changed, and now, say this, you know, the way that you can put Omniscience into play now is with Kona. But Kona has been around the entire time that Omniscience has been in the format. So what happened?
For those who are unfamiliar, what does Kona do?
For those of you who are unfamiliar, Kona is a 4-mana legendary creature. That's a 4/3. And it has a survival ability. And it says, at the beginning of your post-combat main phase, if this creature is tapped, you may put a permanent from your hand onto the battlefield.
It's pretty good.
Which is pretty good. But the issue with that is, how do you tap Kona? And the easy answer to that is combat. That is one of the easiest free ways to tap a creature.
Is that easy, though? Because that's like, it has to survive a full turn cycle. There has to not be something like bigger than it on the battlefield, which in a format of mono red and VV seems hard.
Combat is a non-zero cost, especially on turn 4. If this was like turn 2, there's a chance your opponent hasn't played anything and or your Kona is bigger. But the problem is that Kona has to survive combat. And then there's the possibility that in order to enable tapping Kona, you are playing other worse cards. You are using the enlist mechanic. You're crewing something. That's not good. And it means that your overall deck, you know, composition is worse because you are playing bad cards to facilitate this good effect.
I believe it was Volti who once said, simply take out the bad cards and put in the good cards.
It's true. Now, the way that the Kona deck works is you don't have to play bad spells. You just have to play bad lands.
Badlands is pretty good.
Badlands is good, but it is not legal in Standard.
Regrettable.
But the Badlands in question were introduced during, you know, Badlands in quotation marks, were introduced in Edge of Eternities. And these are the station lands.
Oh, right, of course.
So we have Evendo and we have Uthros. And now these colloquially are the Standard playable Gaia's Cradle and the Standard playable Talarian Academy. But the fantastic thing about playing these cards in this deck is you do not care about the station. What you get, the station payoff, is irrelevant. The station payoff is not relevant at all. What matters is that you are able to tap your Kona for free to station these lands. And so the pattern goes such that you, on turn four, cast your Kona, and then you immediately use it, you tap it, and you station Evendo or Uthros. And what station as a mechanic is you will put counters on it equal to its power. You can do this as a sorcery. And you tap your Kona for free. This also means you're not sending Kona to her death, and you're not sending her into combat, potentially into a screaming nemesis or any other creature that might potentially, you know, a creature of the schism. You are able to just tap the Kona, station, move to your post-combat main phase, and put an omniscience into play.
That seems pretty good.
It seems incredibly good. And the payoff in putting omniscience into play, the whole point, right, as we've mentioned, by the time it's turn 10, if you're hard casting an omniscience, you've kind of lost the game, because you should be able to pay for those spells already with 10 mana. But when it's turn 4 and you get to land an omniscience, you get to cast all your spells for free. And the point of that is running a full playset of stock ups, running a full playset of consult the star charts, and you're also it is a non-zero chance that you are casting Meringue River Regent for the Omen side, and you are drawing three cards and discarding a card, and then shuffling the Meringue River Regent back into your deck. And so you churn through 70% of your deck through the Omniscience play, and the ultimate goal at that point is to cast all four of your Meringue River Regents, which, when you've also cast your Meringue River Regents, there is text on Meringue River Regent that says when this creature enters, return up to two non-land permanents to their owner's hands. You're just getting your opponent to pick up all their stuff. And then hopefully by the time you pass back, your opponent is not really in a position, you know, they would need to kill at least two Meringue River Regents to not immediately die on the next turn.
Yes, most of the
time. Most of the time. Generally, you need to just remove one because it's 6 power amongst all of the Meringue River Regents, so it's 24. So if you remove one, you're at, 18? So generally, you need to just get rid of one. But the chance that you can recover from that point with that many Meringue River Regents on the battlefield is pretty low.
Well, also, there are a lot of, like, shock lands running around, and there are a lot of pain lands running around.
There is a high likelihood your opponent by turn 4 is on less than 20 life.
I will say, or less than 18. One of the cool things about using Meringue River Regent is that if you have two Meringue River Regents, you can just bounce your opponent's entire board immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because it's two non-land permanents, you just play River Regent, bounce two of your opponent's things, play the other River Regent, bounce your River Regent and one of your opponent's other things, and just loop that over and over and over again.
The other piece of tech that's really cool in this deck is it runs a full playset of Roiling Dragonstorm. And Meringue River Regent is a dragon. And so not only are you able, through stock up and consult the star charts, to really refine your draws and make sure that you have, like, this, you know, constant engine and you're not fizzling out, you also have the Meringue River Regents to pick up Roiling Dragonstorms. So you can kind of imagine, you know, you have an Omniscience in play, Roiling Dragonstorm, draw two, discard. Roiling Dragonstorm, draw two, discard. Meringue River Regent, draw three, discard, pick up both of your Dragonstorms. Play both of your Dragonstorms, maybe even by that turn, play a third Dragonstorm, play another Meringue River Regent, pick up three Dragonstorms. It's this really incredible, like, high potency value engine that just churns through the deck like nobody's business. For the most part, once the Omniscience is in play, you really only need two draw spells to keep you going. Because by that point, you know, Consult the Star Charts, obviously, with four lands isn't that effective. It's not as powerful as something like Stock Up at that in that position. Because additionally, even with your Omniscience in play, you can't pay the additional kicker cost off of an Omniscience. And so you're only able to, you know, in this scenario, with four lands in play and an Omniscience and you Consult the Star Charts, you only see four cards and you only get to keep one.
It is worth noting for those playing the deck at home, two Morang River Regents and one Roiling Dragonstorm is drawing your entire deck.
Yeah. It's just over and over and over
again. Loop.
It's very powerful. And so, but the deck is also very linear. The deck, all it wants to do is get to the point where it is pretty much infinitely casting Morang River Regents and Roiling Dragonstorms until the point where you can confidently pass the turn, your opponent has nothing, they pass back, they die. And there are main deck ways that the, you know, the deck tries to keep on pace, like it runs Unauthorized Exit, and that's very good for, you know, the instant speed and haste-enabled creatures. Like if you're in that mono-red matchup and someone throws down a Screaming Nemesis, you're able to bounce it back to their hand and surveil one, which is, again, more refinement in your deck, making sure that if you're at that point, if you know what you need. Do you need another land or do you need another spell? And just making sure that when you surveil, like, you know exactly what you need. Deck is awesome.
Yeah.
I love this deck so much. I think the thing that I didn't like about the blue-white Zorius Control was I didn't like the graveyard element. Cool. I think the deck wasted too many cards. I think there was too many instances of putting cards into the bin, and the incidental graveyard hate that is in the format was a non-zero cost. I find that the Simic version keeps a lot more cards in hand and draws a lot more. In the matchups that it plays into, it is going to pretty effectively steamroll Pixie in game one.
Sure.
Like, I'm sorry to your beloved Pixie deck, but Simic Omniscience pretty effectively steamrolls because there's nothing for them to interact with.
Well, that's okay, because we get you in game two, right?
The post-board matches are definitely way more in favor of Pixie. And I say this, I've played a lot of the Simic Omniscience deck, and I also have played against it using the Pixie deck. Game one is almost never in Pixie's favor. Depending on how you both sideboard, though, you can pretty handily take games two and three. The reason for that is all of the additional hand hate for Pixie is in the sideboard. The whole set of Duresses, like two additional Tiny Bones joins up, they're all locked in the sideboard. And so if you unlock, when you unlock game two, the best things that you do as the Pixie player is take out most of your creature removal and put in all of your hand hate. And if you are able to keep the Simic Omniscience player off tempo and you are able to keep forcing them to discard additional draw spells, if you are able to, you know, force them off of like a high number of cards in hand, they really struggle to put the engine together because it's a linear combo deck. It wants to play Kona, Station, and then play Omniscience. And if you can keep them off of their plan, Pixie, especially the Orzhov Pixie version that I was playing, is very much more aggressive. And it's going to run a lot faster. And it is going to get to a point where the Simic player can't come back from it. Now, that being said, I played multiple matches as the Pixie player where I got my opponent to one, and they won. Doesn't feel great.
This is kind of a known quantity of combo strategy, right? So when you take a combo deck to a tournament, especially a linear combo deck, your goal for the most part is to win game one. That's what those combo decks are designed to do, because oftentimes they will interact in a way that is kind of hard for a deck that is teched against the broader field to interact with efficiently. Not saying it's impossible, but it's very difficult. And because you have a lot of redundancy in the effects in your deck, like you have 8 station lands and you have every card draw spell under the sun, it is reasonably easy then to go off through a single piece of interaction, say. However, that gets a lot harder post-board when a glut of interaction comes in. So a lot of what you're trying to do as a combo deck is clean up game one and then hope to God you win either game two or three.
Interestingly, the deck, you know, the sideboard of the Omniscience deck is really interesting.
Okay.
And it has two cards in it that are some of my favorite effects.
Sure.
Plays Fresh Start.
Okay.
And Unable to Scream.
Sure.
And both of these are effects that remove a creature's abilities. Fresh Start gives a creature -5/-0, and it loses all abilities. It has Flash. Unable to Scream is an enchantment that says target creature becomes like an 0/1 toy with becomes like a toy with base power 0/1 and loses all abilities. And that's really important against difficult to interact with creatures like Screaming Nemesis, Cosmogrand Zenith, Preacher of the Schism, all of those, or, you know, even perhaps say like a Quantum Riddler in some spaces, or another Kona if you happen to be playing the mirror. The effect of removing a creature's abilities is really powerful in this format when every single creature has a paragraph of text and 3 abilities. Like, it's just it's a very powerful effect, and very few decks are able to play it because it takes away from the actual plan that other decks are trying to do. Like, Vivi can't play those cards because they don't progress the Vivi game plan. They don't do anything that net positives the Vivi deck. It's a waste of a card slot if a Vivi deck is playing Unable to Scream or if it's playing Fresh Start. It doesn't do anything. But because the core of the Simic Omniscience deck is so narrow, you're able to play a ton of extra pieces that either protect the combo or protect your life total and enable the game to go on longer. And additionally, like, the, you know, something that was surprising initially when I was looking at the deck is, like, there's not spell pierces, there's not negates, you know, there's not a ton of counter spells. There's singularly one counter spell, a playset, and it's Dispelling Exhale. And the reason that it's played is the same reason that Roiling Dragonstorm is played. It is counter target spell unless its owner pays an additional 2. You may behold a dragon, and if you behold a dragon, counter target spell unless its controller pays an additional 4. Meringue River Regent is a dragon. It remains a dragon. And so it is a decent include in this deck because of how it plays and because of the style of play. So I love it. I think this is like a very cool deck. I really enjoy Green Blue. I really do. The other deck that I am working on in the background is Simic Aggro, because I think the deck is sweet and there's a non-zero chance we'll deck tech that one as well once I've played more with it. Acquiring Ouroboroids did hurt my bank account. But the Simic Omniscience deck is fun. And if you enjoy taking game actions, great deck.
I am a known game action enjoyer.
Pixie is a game action deck as well. It is if you enjoy taking game actions, and if you love drawing cards,
ooh,
this deck is really, really good.
Ooh.
Because again, 4 copies of Stock Up, 4 copies of Consult the Star Charts, 4 copies of Roiling Dragonstorm. Your Meringue River Regents also draw cards. It's just so well put together. And it feels as though it has a better win condition than the Azorius version did a couple months ago. It feels a lot more linear. Like, the Azorius version relied on various loops between the Invasion of Arcavios, and I just didn't feel compelled by the win. Whereas with the Simic version, the total discount that you are receiving on the cards that you play in terms of, like, not paying for is so much higher in the Simic version. You're casting 6 mana Meringue River Regents for free. You're casting, you know, you're casting Stock Up a minimum of, you know, 2 or 3 times, hopefully 4, and that's 12 mana over the course of the game. Like, it's just such a great use of Omniscience as a free spell generator. And, like, throughout this, there's also a high likelihood that you just put in a second omniscience into play in case something goes wrong. It's fantastic. I love the deck.
It sounds it. And I will say, I actually think the Simic deck is better than the Azorius deck.
Yeah. And I say that selfishly because I like Simic better, but I also do think categorically it's a better version.
Yeah, and there are a couple of reasons for that. The first one is that the individual pieces are harder to interact with, right? It is actively quite difficult in this current format to interact with a land, right? The fact that one of the key enabling pieces are 8 lands that just so incidentally happen to safely, you know, enable your Kona on the turn it comes into play is very powerful. The fact that it is 4 mana as well, the combo, so to speak, the casting Kona, is a 4 mana play, which is kind of the sweet spot for this deck, right? It means that the deck is capable of killing on turn 4. Another thing to note is the card, and we haven't talked about it yet, is Lost in the Maze.
Oh, yes. Sorry. The worst card in the whole deck.
And yet also quietly the best, I think.
Yeah, very powerful in this deck specifically.
Lost in the Maze, for those who are unfamiliar, is a blue-blue X enchantment that says when it enters, tap up to X target creatures, put a stun counter on those creatures that you don't control, and tapped creatures you control have hexproof. This is important for a couple of reasons. First is the like combo game plan where you're casting a Lost in the Maze. Oh, I think it also has flash, right?
Yes.
Yes. You're casting a Lost on the Maze, say, on turn 2. And then you're untapping and you're casting Kona. And then you're immediately crewing it to one of your lands. Now, the important part about that is there isn't actually a round of priority where Kona is in play but not tapped, where your opponent would have an opportunity to use a removal spell on your Kona. So that means that the kind of natural weakness of using a creature enabler is pretty effectively mitigated. The only like single removal spell that continues to be effective in that position is Nowhere to Run, because Kona is a 4/3, which means it does die to the -3/-3, and the Nowhere to Run gets around the hexproof. But that is so much slimmer of a scenario than the Azorius deck ever had, because A, it could interact with the instant spell, it could interact with the graveyard, or once the omniscience was in play, the omniscience was a creature and could be interacted with after the fact. And I remember back when I was playing Halls of Pixie, back when it was good, I remember winning some games because my opponent was at 2 cards in hand. They Abuelas an omniscience and cast a door spell, and I get lost at their omniscience, or I know where to run their omniscience, or I cast a single removal spell. And that line doesn't really exist in the Simic deck. Instead, you're very redundant, you're very powerful, and you have protection that is well designed to interact with the interaction in the format. And you also have like incidental pieces of good disruption, like Unauthorized Exit, which really gets at the best decks in the format, right? It's a great way to deal with, you know, Razorkin Needlehead, or importantly, Agatha's Salt Cauldron.
Mm-hmm. No, this is one of the better versions of the deck, in my opinion. This is one of the better versions of the deck. I like the green-blue color combination. And it's so interesting as well to see the color expression differences within the format. Like, obviously, Simic Omniscience being a linear combo deck, it looks nothing like the Simic aggro deck that's in the format. They don't even play anywhere near the same amount of, like, the same spells. Like, almost there's zero overlap as far as I am aware. None. But they're both very powerful independently. And again, like, Simic Omniscience attacks on the combo angle, Simic aggro attacks on the aggro angle. And so it's very interesting seeing like a different expression between these two cards, you know, these two decks within the same color archetype. I love it. I love the deck. I love playing it. I want to play it more. I think people are still not quite expecting it. And so it has a little bit of a surprise element, not a ton, but I think it can hold its own. It's sitting up like it's a tier, you know, below tier 2, tier 3 deck still, but it's interesting and it's fun. And I like that Omniscience is back. I like that there is still a fun way to put Omniscience into play. I do remember when Omniscience was spoiled for Foundations and it was like, Omniscience is coming back to Standard. There were a lot of people saying like, oh, well, this is not going to be Standard playable because who can pay 10 mana for an enchantment? My immediate response was, there's no way people are paying 10 mana for this enchantment. And this was like a little bit before the Abuelos interaction was kind of exploited. But in my head, I was like, this is going to be actually such a playable card if any way to cheat it into play is exploited. Lo and behold, Omniscience is a Standard playable card.
And has been for like literal months.
Yeah.
Continues to be
literally
good.
Literally for months, it's been a playable card. And I think that's so interesting, especially as we've been starting to kind of move into other competitive 60 card constructed formats like Modern. Omniscience is not playable in Modern. Don't make that face at me. Don't make that face at me. What do you know? What do you know? What do you know?
No, I agree. Omniscience is not actually playable in Modern.
It's not playable in Modern. It's not playable in Highlander. It's not legal in Pauper. Like, it's so interesting to see that it's found its way. It's previously found its way into Standard by way of Azorius Omniscience. It's now back by way of Simic Omniscience. I think that's really cool. I think that is a facet that you'd really only get in Standard. And I think that's really cool.
Agreed. And with all that said, that is all we have for you today. New episodes release at 11 a.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time every Monday. You can find our releases at RaiseMTG on both Instagram and Blue Sky, where you can also find Kira and myself, Kira at kirabobira.jpg on Instagram, and Kira Bobira on Blue Sky, and myself at MayaMTG on both platforms. A big thank you to Henhouse Recording Studios for the ongoing use of their space. And until next week, remember,
on Ikoria, even the gentlest creatures are constantly evolving, outpacing tooth and claw with mighty natural armor.